Syria would have fallen by 2014 or earlier. This on the part of the United States, Syria was always, the war against Syria by America was always just a prelude to and part of the war against Iran. It was a way primarily to weaken Iran, ready for changing the government of Iran. Well, it's all come to nothing. It's now crumbling in a really embarrassing way. And this is why the United States is so angry tonight.
Thank you very much. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria, joining us live from Manchester, and Leith Maarouf, activist and political commentator from Beirut. That's all the time that we have for this edition of The Spotlight, and I'm very grateful that you shared your thoughts and views with us in this edition.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyil mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء وَاللَّهُ وَاسِعٌ عَلِيمٌ الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you revive the dead," he said, "Do you not believe?" He said, "Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest." He said, "Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise." Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Israel carries airstrikes on the Gaza Strip for the fifth straight day, prompting Palestinian resistance groups to retaliate with rockets. The leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah says the Israeli regime has failed to sow division among Palestinian factions through its aggression against the Gaza Strip. And a former U.S. Marine is charged with manslaughter over the choking death of an African American in New York City. Everybody, top story for this half hour. The Israeli regime continues its airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip for the fifth straight day. Israeli warplanes have struck different parts of Gaza, but there's no immediate reports of casualties and damage from Saturday's attacks. In retaliation, however, Palestinian resistance groups fired more rockets toward Israeli settlements across the Gaza fence, as well as the Israeli city of Ashkelon. At least 33 Palestinians have been killed and nearly 150 wounded in the regime's attack since Tuesday. Meanwhile, Palestinians say their retaliatory attacks will continue until Tel Aviv stops its policy of assassinating resistance leaders. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has also said that the silence of the international community emboldens Israel to continue its acts of aggression. A correspondent, Asher Shannon, says Palestinian resistance groups are pressing ahead with their retaliatory attacks against the Israeli regime.
The Palestinian resistance had been firing rockets towards the occupied territories, targeting areas as far as Tel Aviv, Rehovot, as well as settlements near Al-Quds, Bethlehem, and also in the Negev. What we've seen over the last days, an increase in the military capabilities of Palestinian resistance, mainly Al-Quds Brigade's military wing, who yesterday released a video of their latest rocket called Burak 85 that reaches up to 85 kilometers. The Israel's so-called Iron Dome missile interception system, it's a multi-billion dollar system that was financed by the United States, has failed to intercept most of the rockets. Nearly 70% of the rockets that were fired from Gaza have managed to hit areas inside the Israeli regime. And the use of the Burak 85 rocket has forced Tel Aviv to use another system, a missile interception system called David Sling, that only managed to catch or down a few of those rockets.
Tensions have once again risen in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli regime forces have raided a refugee camp in the city of Nablus, leaving casualties. Zara correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joins us now to bring us up to speed on the story. Mona, what details do you have to share with us and our viewers right now?
First of all, it seems that Israeli undercover units, this means that Israeli forces described as Palestinians entered the refugee camp of Balata, the neighborhood of Al Jasamin in Balata refugee camp. Then Israeli forces raided the refugee camp and surrounded a building there. They were demanding via loudspeakers Palestinians inside this building to turn themselves, or that the Israeli forces would explode the house. Then clashes had been taking place between the residents and fighters inside the refugee camp of Balata with Israeli forces. Palestinian paramedics just issued a statement saying that two Palestinians were killed during this operation that is still taking place in Balata, and at least five others were wounded. So as we are receiving now, 32-year-old Saad Shakir, as well as 19-year-old Adnan Al-A'raj, were killed by the Israeli forces during the operation that is still taking place in Balata, a refugee camp in Nablus. Five others were wounded. One of them is in serious condition. We have to say that in the last few days, Palestinian resistance groups, including the Jihad movement, Lion's Den, and Jenin Brigade, issued statements saying that what's going on in Gaza and the airstrikes that are being taking place against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the increased number of martyrs, this means that Palestinians will continue their struggle here in the occupied West Bank. A number of of shootings have taken place in the occupied West Bank, and the Jihad movement, the Lion's Den, and Jenin Brigades claimed responsibility for clashes that had been taking place in numerous areas in the occupied West Bank, saying that the Gaza Strip is not alone and that resistance is the only option for Palestinians everywhere in the occupied West Bank, in Al-Quds, as well as in the Gaza Strip.
All right, thanks a lot. Mona Kandil joining us from Ramallah. The leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says Israel has failed to drive a wedge between Palestinian resistance groups through its latest strip. Sayed Hassan Nasrallah says resistance groups have remained united and foiled enemy plots. He added that Israel's attacks are a final attempt to cover up the regime's internal crisis and restore. Nasrallah further said the Lebanese resistance movement will not hesitate to support Palestinians in the face of Israel's deadly violence.
We are in constant contact with the leaders of the Palestinian factions, and we are monitoring their situation and all developments minute by minute. We are providing all possible help within certain limits. But I'd like to add that at any time, if the responsibility falls on us to make a move or more, we will not hesitate to do so, God willing.
The Hezbollah leader also denounced the international community's silence on Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Elsewhere, he touched upon the normalization of ties between Syria and Arab countries. Nasrallah said the rapprochement has brought positive results for the region and called on Lebanon to restore ties with Syria as soon as possible. Our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, explains in more detail the Hezbollah leader's stance on supporting Palestinian resistance groups.
Of course, when it comes to the stance of Hezbollah as a resistance, he said that they are in contact minute by minute with the Palestinian resistance, and they are following up, of course, on a minute by minute everything that's happening, and are giving limited assistance. However, he did mention, which is something very significant and would of course reverberate with the Israelis, which is that Hezbollah, whenever they feel necessary to take any measure or any steps in assistance or to give assistance to the resistance, then they will not hesitate. So that is something that I think we will see a lot of analysis from the Israeli side on what the type of assistance that Hezbollah might give, other than the fact that they have extending arms, they are giving logistic support, they are giving financial support, they are giving political and moral support. What type of assistance could Hezbollah, what more can Hezbollah do in order to give assistance to the Palestinian resistance?
Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic has made arrangements for the official opening of its diplomatic mission and consulate in Saudi Arabia. Hossein Amir Abdullahian was speaking on the phone with his Saudi counterpart, Prince Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud. He said the recent visits by officials from the two countries show that both Tehran and Riyadh are determined to cooperate with each other. Prince Faisal, for his part, expressed hope the cooperation between the two sides will be facilitated by sending their respective ambassadors to Tehran. Iran and Saudi Arabia agreed to restore ties in talks held in the Chinese capital in March. The China broker deal put an end to 7 years of strained ties. Former American military officer Daniel Penny is charged over the killing of a homeless black man in New York subway by placing him in a chokehold. The officer could face up to 15 years in prison if found guilty. For the death of Jordan Neely, we discuss this in our news review program.
And I welcome everyone to news review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Now, a former U.S. Marine, that is, who recently killed a homeless black man on a New York subway, has been charged with second-degree manslaughter. Daniel Penny was arraigned in a criminal court in Manhattan after handing himself over to police. Former white Marine was later released on bond. He could face up to 15 years in prison if found guilty for the death of Jordan Neely. Penny killed Neely after putting him in a deadly chokehold on a train on May 1st. Incident sparked widespread protests throughout the city. Demonstrators decried Neely's death an act of lynching and an example of white vigilantism. They also called for justice for Neely. And now joining us for this segment here is Colin Campbell, correspondent, joining us from Washington, D.C., and Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator, joining us out of New York. Hello, gentlemen. We can welcome you both to the program. Colin, we're going to start with you. What can you tell us about this story and how it's unfolded over the last week?
Well, we know that Penny has been arraigned, sort of like what you said before, but this was a long in the waiting as we saw protesters converge in New York City subways and police to be called in to break up protesters. But we saw the intensity heating up over the past several days as we saw and observed how Penny was able to walk away after being questioned by police, despite taking someone's life into his own hands. And so now what's happening is the district attorney is also appealing to a grand jury for a possible indictment also against Penny, even though he's already been arraigned on manslaughter charges. He was released out on bond, and he is expected to be back in court in early July.
Thank you, Colin. And Daniel Shaw, welcome to the program there, sir. Daniel, your thoughts, your initial thoughts on the story, and why do you think it took over a week for this warrant to be issued for this young man?
Another case of a horrific murder of an innocent young black life. It's every 28 hours in this country that law enforcement and white vigilantism takes a black death. Jordan Neely should be alive today, continuing to impersonate Michael Jackson. He should be alive with support for all of the PTSD. Really, the system killed him, though he lost his lives to this RoboCop, this coward, this Marine who came up from behind him and choked him to death. So to see him arraigned today, certainly brought some small sense of peace to those of us who stand against white supremacy and police brutality. But there's so much more work ahead of us. The fact that he's already out on bail says so much. The fact that it took nearly 2 weeks to put this murderer into jail says so much about the American injustice system.
And Colin, if you could tell us some of the reactions we've had from black community leaders on this.
Well, as you would imagine, some of them are outraged over what happened, because what we see here is the policing of black bodies, something that a topic that people have asked me about throughout this week as well. We've seen this type of vigilantism in other cases too. This is not the first time, obviously, in American history. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, we observed the death of Carolyn Bryant. And what I mean observed, I mean we witnessed, or at least were around for, not that we took time out of our schedules because this person died. Carolyn Bryant was a woman who accused a young black man of whistling at her or threatening her, which led to his beating and his eventual lynching. You've heard his name, Emmett Till. This happened in 1955. And we've seen cases even more recently of this type of white vigilantism when it came to Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, when it came to Jordan Davis, who was killed by a man who thought he was playing his music too loud, when it came to Ahmaud Arbery and the Michaels brothers, who took it upon themselves to try to apprehend or to detain a young black man who was just jogging through a neighborhood. And then, of course, as we know, that led to his eventual shooting. When we, just a couple weeks ago with Ralph Yarl, a young black man who went to someone's door, and then next thing you know, he was fired upon by gunshots simply because the man felt threatened by his presence. And to not have a person be detained, or for a person to kill a young black man, be questioned by police and then released, really shows how far we have not come when it comes to the way that black men are treated, the way that they can be disregarded, the way that white people seem to have some type of deference or empathy when it comes to taking the life of a black person, and particularly black men who usually are disproportionately affected by white vigilantism. So here we have another case. That's why, again, we saw so many protesters who are outraged. Black community leaders and community leaders alike who have some sort of conscience were also annoyed by this and unnerved that a person could walk away. We do know that Penny's father or grandfather is also tied in to the police department, so there could be some connections there as to why he was questioned and then allowed to walk away and why he's still free now out on bond.
And Daniel, why do you think that's the case where in white culture we don't see, why do we not see that in African American culture, this need to try to be hero and play the vigilante role? And we not only see it more so in white culture, we almost only see it in white culture, we also see it in an excessive, disproportionate overkill every single time. Why?
This country has a long, long history of white supremacy, of violence against black life. Look at Kyle Rittenhouse. We can add him to Colin's list, an important list that he laid out there. How many crimes against black America, how much police terrorism, police murder, police humiliation, harassment. Kyle Rittenhouse is free today after firing upon unarmed demonstrators in Kenosha, Wisconsin, who came out into the streets simply to say no to police violence. So the United States is extremely polarized around this issue. If Daniel Penny was black, he would have been immediately sent to Rikers Island for killing somebody on the F train, a train that we ride every day here in New York City, and all these trains. And it's important to remember that the vast majority of mentally ill people in our society, where are they? They're in prison and they're in the streets. They're not receiving any help, yet they can send $150 billion for a proxy war against Russia with the Ukrainian people trapped in the middle. So again, it shows what Dr. Martin Luther King often talked about, the absolute lack of social priorities in our society and the necessity for a revolution in our society's priorities.
All right, gentlemen. I want to thank you both for joining us on the program. I know both of you are educators, and it would have been a pleasure to sit through one of your lectures either. You guys stay safe, both of you, and thank you both for joining us there. Dr. Kellen Campbell, they're joining us out of the U.S. Capitol, and Daniel Shaw, their academic and commentator, joining us out of New York. And viewers, that brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your News Review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger, to let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the most merciful.
Limelight. More Americans died of gun-related injuries in 2021 than in any other year on record, according to the latest available statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. That included record numbers of both gun murders and gun suicides. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Recent international growth in this regard, Texas is setting a new record for mass killings. A day after a gunman killed 8 people and injured 7 others north of Dallas, Texas, the driver of a Land Rover drove into a group of migrants waiting at a bus stop, killing 8 on Sunday, May 7th. 10 people were injured. The attack occurred in Brownsville, Texas, near the border with Mexico. The driver of the Land Rover, identified as George Alvarez, was initially charged with reckless driving, according to police. Also on Monday, May 8th morning, the police charged him with 8 counts of manslaughter. The police said they had not yet determined whether the act was intentional. Alvarez had a record that include prior charges of assault and driving while intoxicated, according to police. After the Brownsville killing, he tried to flee the scene, but witnesses held him until the police arrived. Police Chief Felix Sousa said at a news conference that the department was waiting results of former toxicology tests. Alvarez was not cooperating, the police said. In the mall shooting in Allen, Texas, the alleged gunman died after a confrontation with police at the Allen Premium Outlets, the scene of the shooting, Allen Police Department officials said on Saturday, May 6th. The hospitalized victims' ages ranges from 5 to 61 years old, authorities said. There was a surreal scene after the shooting. Shoppers at the Allen Premium Outlets were ordered to come out with their hands in the air, presumably to ensure nobody was carrying a weapon or was an accomplice in the shooting. After the latest massacre in Dallas, there was a string of vacuous statements from American officials. President Joe Biden called on Congress to pass an assault weapons ban following the Texas mall mass shooting. Yesterday, an assailant in tactical gear armed with an AR-15-style assault weapon gunned down innocent people in a shopping mall, and not for the first time. Such an attack is too shocking to be so familiar, Biden said in a statement released on Sunday, May 7th, adding, and yet, American communities have suffered roughly 200 mass shootings already this year. According to leading counts, more than 14,000 of our fellow citizens have lost their lives, credible estimates show. The leading cause of death for American kids is gun violence. Vice President Kamala Harris intoned in equally somber tone, saying, "All Americans deserve to be safe from gun violence." She also urged Congress to act. She said in a statement, "Doc and I mourn for the 8 adults and children who lost their lives, pray for those wounded, and send our gratitude to the first responders who ran toward danger. All Americans deserve to be safe from gun violence, but they are not," Harris continued. "Not because we do not know the solutions. Not because the American people are divided on this issue. even a majority of gun owners support sensible reforms. Harris added, "We need action." Despite such pleas, why is there no let-up in gun violence in the United States of America? In 2021, there were 48,830 deaths from gun-related injuries, according to the latest data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. That's nearly an 8% increase from 2020, which was a record-breaking year for firearm deaths. In Mexico, by comparison, there were 22,116 gun-related deaths in the year 2019. Data shows more than 50 people are killed each day by a firearm in the U.S., according to the CDC. That's a significantly larger portion of homicides than in the case in neighboring Canada at 37%. Why is gun-related violence so prevalent in the United States? Some people say that it is the number of guns in private hands in the U.S., estimated at 390 million in 2018, according to the Swiss-based research project, the Small Arms Survey. The U.S. ratio of 120.5 firearms per 100 residents, up from 88 per 100 in 2011, far surpasses that of other countries around the world. So one must look elsewhere to seek answers to the very high rate of gun-related killings in the U.S. Violence is glorified in American culture. It is projected on television as well as in video games. When Americans murder millions of innocent people abroad in the endless wars of aggression, it is applauded at home. In the U.S., the police shoot first and ask questions later, if at all. It is said that violence is as American as apple pie. When the culture of violence is glorified in America, it is not surprising that people would resort to it at the first opportunity. School mass shootings have escalated. Nowhere else in the world are children murdered in such high numbers as in the U.S. Welcome to the land of the freaks.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Iranian culture and food.
Part 1.
Along with language, flag, religion, customs, traditions, and national arts, food and sofre are among the elements that define nations' identities. Food is a delicious part of culture of every nation and is a good measure to determine kindness, generosity, ethics, protection of environment and nature, and the type of its worldview. Iranian dishes have stories rooted in history. Many of today's dishes in the world were first made and cooked in this country. Iranian dishes have original and natural tastes. We use spices as much as necessary in food. Each culinary school has prominent aroma and flavor that is introduced with it. The fragrance of Iranian cuisine is made of saffron, cardamom, and rose water and a golden color. Iranian food has a mild taste. In cooking, we pay attention to the benefits and what is harmful in the ingredients. Everything must be in balance. Kermanshah, pure animal oil, ambarbu, tarimi and Hashemi rice, lamb of Mughan, afshar and sangsari, Azerbaijan yogurt, dezful citrus, dates of bam and bushehr, Khorasan wheat, and north and south fish, each have a special and unique taste. This documentary is a tribute to thousands of years of Iranian cooking. This work is about Iranian food. It is about people we don't know but who are involved in our sustenance. This documentary is a tribute to the mothers of this land who taught their children the cooking traditions of Iran generation after generation so that this old and unique art remains eternal. This documentary is a tribute to our beloved country, Iran. Iran is a country full of wealth in so many ways, tens of generations before us, and we use the same Iranian dishes, and it is up to us to protect the sacred heritage. I'm Nusha Tabibi Gilani. I am interested in Iranian culture and food. After the invasion of Mahmud Hotak and the destruction of the Safavid dynasty, and a turbulent period was imposed on Iran. The conflicts and rise of Nader Shah and then the rule of Karim Khan Zand brought short periods of balance and peace that were not very stable. In these periods, naturally, decorative arts and the construction of buildings and emirates were not considered and did not have a chance to grow. Agha Mohammad Khan, the ruler of the Qajar dynasty, established a new era for Iran by unifying the country and establishing regulations, stability, and security. In this period, the construction of buildings, state emirates, and decorative arts started again. Qajari special aesthetics gradually appeared. There is a mixture of delicate and detailed Safavid art and European-style paintings. The use of new colors and patterns signaled the beginning of another era in Iranian fine arts. Gulistan Palace in Tehran is a perfect example of Qajar art. Its foundation was laid during the Safavid rule and reached perfection and beauty during the time of the Qajar rulers. We can see a collection of carved tiles, statues, marble thrones, perforated windows, delicate sash windows with colorful glasses, and detailed mirror work. There are rooms that are covered from half of the walls to the ceiling with paintings of faces of the mythological and historical kings of Iran, flowers, birds, arabesque and Toranj patterns. There are also beautiful Nastaliq scripts in this place. The Qajari taste seems a little rougher compared to what was left from the Safavid period. Among the kings of Qajar, Nasiruddin Shah had an artistic vision. Of course, in cooking and food, a special style of his period has remained. One of the royal ceremonies was Ashpazan. This ceremony was held in full detail every year. Its central core was cooking, which originated from Nasiruddin Shah's personal interests in it. The cooking of Nazri Ash was founded for the health of the king by his mother, Malik Jahan Khanum, and according to another story, Amina Akhdas, his wife. Dr. Jean-Baptiste Fevreur also believes that this type of Ash was vowed by the king in the year of the outbreak of cholera to protect himself from the disease. This ceremony was held in the early autumn when all the men, nobles, and lords gathered in Surkh-e Hisar. The sofre was spread under the tents, and the nobles of the country used to sit on the ground and clean vegetables and peel eggplants. They used all kinds of vegetables and summer fruits, dried and fresh fruits, nuts, melons, sugar, turmeric, saffron, rice, wheat, lamb, and poultry in this ash. There were 30 huge cauldrons on fire pits. When ash was prepared, women would come out and Anis Adul poured the first bowl of ash for Nasiruddin Shah with a golden ladle, and then others would start eating. This custom was maintained until the end of Nasiruddin Shah's reign, and then it was abolished. Iranians have the same skill in cooking various types of bread as they have a unique skill in cooking different types of ash. Bread and ash are predominant in Iranian cooking and play important roles in our cuisine. Cooking each of these important elements in Iranian sofre needs different skills. Many hidden treasures of the Iranian culture and history can be found in Khorasan.
روستای تلخ در نزدیکی کاشمر و
Tark village is located near Kashmir and has a rich history. In my opinion, if someone wants to know Iran, he must know Khorasan. The Farsi language we speak today is the same that has spread throughout Iran from this region. The Farsi language we speak today is the same, and it has spread throughout Iran from this region. I think that Khorasan still retains many of its historical features. When we look for Iranian roots, we can find many of them in Khorasan even today. Tark village is located near Kashmir and still sticks to its old texture and is full of life. There are kind and generous people in this region. They are very hospitable, and we have been staying here for a while. We got familiar with the people, their customs and traditions. We found traces of these traditions in the rich history of our land. There are different kinds of bread made of the famous Khorasan wheat, daim, which is known as red wheat. Good quality bread is prepared from this type of wheat. There are also different types of ash. According to many researchers, ash reshte basically comes from Khorasan. They cook a special kind of ash reshte in this village. In this dish, instead of using the usual vegetables that we use in other cities of our country, they use a special vegetable called kuria. They harvest this kind of vegetable from the hills around this same village. When this vegetable is dried, it is called black grass or black leaf. This vegetable is very tasty and wonderful and gives a special taste to this type of ash reshte.
خیلی سبزی خوش طعم فوق العاده ای و طعم ویژه ای به آش رشته مخصوص روستای ترق میده.
Chorba is cooked and eaten in neighboring countries. As its name suggests, it has Iranian roots. Ba means ash in Farsi, and there are different types of that like sirkeba or sekba or chorba that are recorded in history. This is an old Iranian tradition based on which family members gathered around the sofre, which was full of love. They would eat bread and ash and were thankful for Allah's blessings. They believed that the presence of guests around such sofre would increase their blessings. The Iranian sofre has been formed in full compliance with the special climate of this land. Water wasn't available and cultivation was impossible before. They had to take water from far away to the agricultural lands or to the homes. Therefore, the collective intelligence of Iranians has formed a special school of cooking based on the mentioned conditions. This type of cooking has an amazing and unique variety despite the many natural limitations. Iranians also paid attention to other matters such as architecture and urban engineering. They considered the details and adaptability of these buildings according to nature and the climate. Jami Mosque of Gonabad is an example of artistry, elegance, and harmony with nature and climate. This mosque has two porches, which is known as the Khorasani style mosque. Various types of Khorasani ash are unique, just like Khorasani architecture. Among these different kinds of ash, ash jush pare has a distinct appearance and also tastes wonderful. Ash jush pare had different appearances according to recipes written in Safavid cookbook. They put ingredients of ash jush pare in dumpling wrappers and then cook them. Then they add kashk, roasted poppy, and mint fried in oil. When a person eats ash jush pare, he experiences delicious flavors. use a combination of beans, lentils, spices, and vegetables in this type of osh. This extremely delicious dish does not contain meat. Eshkeneh is the most important type of Iranian food apart from osh. The history of this dish goes back to the ancient past. It is a simple and accessible food that can be prepared from very simple ingredients. One could satiate his hunger by eating eshkeneh. It also optimizes people's energy. Iranians used this food a lot until a few decades ago, but today they rarely eat eshkeneh. The people of every corner of Iran prepared eshkeneh using available ingredients in their regions. One can prepare eshkeneh with a handful of flour and available fragrant vegetables and add pieces of bread. Using bread makes it a filling dish. Farmers and workers used to eat eshkeneh. Today we could say that osh and abgusht derived from eshkeneh. They use chunky pieces of bread in tilit, osh, abgusht, and eshkeneh, a kind of taftan that is baked in some regions of Khorasan is completely different from the kinds of bread baked in Tehran and Isfahan. The size and thickness of this bread makes it filling for people who use it. There's a kind of eshkeneh that is made of yogurt. This dish is really famous in Khorasan. They serve it with roasted tomatoes and eggplants. The full plate of this meal eshkeneh comes with pieces of bread in it, roasted tomatoes, eggplants. This dish is healthy, simple, very delicious, and is made without meat. They make osh with flour or dough balls, wheat, barley, and rice. Noodles are sometimes main ingredients of some types of osh. Cutting noodles in Sultaniyeh and Zanjan has a long history.
برخلاف ادعای بسیاری رشته قطعاً از اروپا به ایران نیامده بلکه
contrary to many claims, noodles definitely did not come to Iran from Europe. It was the other way around, and noodles went from the east to the west. In our ancient texts, we can see names of different types of noodles that people used, like bandeqaba, gisuye yar, pulati, among many others. It shows that we have a long history in using noodles. It is probably the case that we learned how to eat noodles from our eastern neighbors. Maybe we learned it from the Chinese.
شاید از چین در واقع به ایران آمده باشه. در اینجایی که ما هستیم گزلدره
یک Now we are in Gozaldare, Sofla. We will visit a place where they cut noodles. We will know about the process of making noodles.
خواهیم دید
Cutting noodles is a very common job in Sultaniyeh and Gozaldare Sofla. It means that there are several workshops and people eat different types of noodles. Sultaniyeh was a center of the Ilkhanids government, and it may be the reason why so many people eat noodles in this area. Eating Chinese food was the Ilkhanids culture and can be the reason for the establishment of so many workshops here. These workshops are still active. Sultaniyeh was a city that did not last many years. It suddenly appeared in history by the Ilkhanid kings, and it was destroyed after Muhammad Khodabandi's death. He left many important works in this area, like knife making in Zanjan, cutting noodles, and Dashkasan temple. Thank you.
in the limelight.
The facial recognition surveillance system violates Palestinians' human rights to freedom of movement and privacy. The Zionist regime is deepening its system of apartheid in the occupied Palestinian territories by using artificial intelligence-powered biometric facial recognition technology to track and restrict the movements of Palestinian people. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Throughout Road in this regard, facial recognition technology identifies and categorizes people on the basis of their physical features, including race, ethnicity, gender, age, and disability status. Facial recognition technology was first introduced into the Zionist regime apartheid in 1999. But a new report from Amnesty International has examined the use of a novel facial recognition technology system known as Red Wolf, which has been deployed at military checkpoints in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil since 2022. It scans the faces of Palestinians, often denies them entry, and adds them to massive Israeli regime databases without their consent. Facial recognition technology is increasingly being used to stalk Palestinians, keeping them under near-constant observation. The surveillance is accomplished with a network of closed-circuit television CCTV cameras mounted on lampposts, the sides of buildings, surveillance towers, and rooftops. The Zionist regime troops are given incentives to keep Palestinians under constant surveillance. In a shameful contest, the troops are awarded prizes for the battalion with the highest number of Palestinians registered into the database. The West Bank, including illegally annexed East Al-Quds and the Gaza Strip, remain under illegal Zionist regime military occupation. The fabricated regime of Israel controls the ingress and egress of Palestinians, who must have permits from Israeli regime authorities to cross between Gaza, East Al-Quds, and the West Bank. Agnes Callamard, Amnesty International Secretary General, said the Israeli authorities are using sophisticated surveillance tools to supercharge segregation and automate apartheid against Palestinians, using illegitimately acquired biometric data to monitor and control Palestinians' movements. In addition to the constant threat of excessive physical force and arbitrary arrest, Palestinians must now contend with the risk of being tracked by an algorithm or barred from entering their own neighborhoods based on information stored in discriminatory surveillance databases. In a new 82-page report titled Automated Apartheid: How Facial Recognition Fragments, Segregates, and Controls Palestinians in the OPD, Amnesty International details Israeli regime's authorities' extensive use of facial recognition technology to support their continued domination and oppression of Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territories. This report elaborates on Amnesty International's 2022 report, The Zionist Regime's Apartheid Against Palestinians, Cruel System of Domination and Crime Against Humanity, which found that the Zionist regime maintains a system of oppression and domination over Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territories and the diaspora. The said segregation is conducted in a systematic and highly institutionalized manner through legislation and policies and practices that are intended to prevent Palestinians from enjoying equal rights to the Jewish Israelis. The new report cites Palestinian residents of Al-Khalil and occupied East Al-Quds, who describe the ways in which surveillance cameras invade their privacy, discourage activism, erode their social life, and leave them feeling constantly exposed, even in their homes. They have to cover their windows with black blinds to avoid exposure to the electric eyes. Sarah, who lives in the East Al-Quds neighborhood of Selvan, says, "When the cameras were set up, if we stood by the window, we could be detected as if the cameras were just in our house. With cameras watching our every move, we were put in a terrible position. We couldn't feel at home in our own house and had to be fully dressed all the time." Neda, a Palestinian resident, reported, "I'm being watched the whole time. It gives me a real